Another present.
Okay, program. I'm looking through the list. Did you get the list of what we're talking about? I do these talks all the time, and I don't prepare myself. I just go, let's see. Well, so we're going to talk about compost and feeding your garden naturally. Okay? How many of you all make compost? Cool. Any problems?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've been working on it for 9 months, and that last layering leaves, and it's not.
Should she get the microphone? It doesn't work anymore, right? Okay, never mind. So nothing's happening?
Well, we pulled it out and kind of thought too soon to use it.
Yeah. This one lady called me up the other day. We have a club and we have almost 7,000 members. So this lady calls me up. She says, you know, I have this compost bin for 3 years now. Do you think it'll be ready soon? And I said, well, let's go over this. Because those little bins right there, they do work, but you have to pay a little more attention to them. You have to baby them. They're barely the right, big enough to really make compost. It's actually, they're perfect for vermiculture. You know what vermiculture is? You let worms do this stuff. And that's a perfect... That's a perfect vermiculture container because it doesn't have to heat up. Anything you eat there, the worms will eat right up. You see, it's a perfect setup. However, for this size, see, the actual smallest size you want to make for compost is 4 cubic feet, 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet, like a big bin. The reason for that is that's the minimum size you need for it to heat up a certain temperature. Can everybody hear me okay? Right? That's the minimum size you need for it. You know, by the way, I'm missing my cartoons. That's okay. So that's the minimum size that you need for it to heat up to a certain temperature. The temperature has to be 220 degrees Fahrenheit, see? That'll kill diseases, that'll kill seeds and any pathogens. That unfortunately won't heat up unless you push it a little bit, see? You can't push it. You know, one of the things that I like doing with these units, and it really will increase, you see how they have slits along the side to let air flow through, right? Air is what really, because air is oxygen and the bacteria get the air. So you're really, this whole thing is a bacteriological thing. The bacteria eat the stuff. And that's what composting is. It's a process of bacteria eating things. And the bacteria take the energy and they give off the steam and the bacteria make the food. Okay? You know the difference when something's rotting and when something's composting? Well, that's the first thing you have to understand, right? Because a lot of times there maybe she's maybe rotting. So in your case, what you need to do there is, what are you putting in? And tell me a little bit what about that? Okay.
My bin is right next to the garden.
Okay. 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 Chicken manure? You have a chickens? Okay, you're still buying chicken manure in a bag already. Okay.
And get my gardener to stir it once a week.
Okay, and that's it?
Lawn chickens in it when the poison is around the lawn.
Okay, tell me a little bit about your yard. What are you feeding your yard with and stuff? You say grass clippings, leaves. What are you feeding everything? You got 5 seconds. And you can tell me, if you're chemicals, you have to say the truth. Everybody here, we're all friends, you know what I mean? What? Fish emulsion or fish meal, yeah.
And one other something else. And the garden's thriving on that.
Seems, sounds good. Yeah, any kind, yeah. Okay, what are you feeding the lawn?
Scott's
lawn food. Yeah, it's a weed and feed. Oh, you have to be careful of weed and feed. Okay. Okay. I need to make some notes here because I'm going on two different tracks. First of all, we were talking about compost, and then we got oxalis. We got weed and feed. Them's fighting words when it comes to gardeners, but okay, so basically in your compost setup, you're doing really good in feeding all these little things and stuff. There is one thing missing there that really makes everything work, and that's minerals, trace minerals, okay? Now, we can assume that the alfalfa meal and the cottonseed meal, all these things have some trace minerals in them. And there, I assume that's all organic sources, right? You're getting from organic sources?
I don't know any organic
sources. Okay, well, that, if it doesn't say organic, it's not organic. Going to the feed store, and you, who knows what where it's coming from and what's growing, what conditions it's growing under and stuff. Well, there's a catalog. That's why I brought some catalogs. I started giving this talk in the sixth grade. I started my business in the sixth grade. And right off the bat, I started giving talks. And it's a long story. I started doing ant treatments in the sixth grade. I charged 25 cents an ant treatment. But see, so if you go to a feed store, I call it a good old boy store, who knows what's in the alfalfa meal, whether there's any trace minerals in it at all. Who knows what's in the cottonseed meal. More than likely, if it doesn't say organic, it's chemically grown. Chemically grown means it doesn't have the things, the energy. So that's what it's all about, it's energy. You ever notice when you have organically grown produce, it doesn't rot? It'll just sort of dry out and get dry, whereas the same produce, chemically grown, will rot on you. No energy. The energy is what holds it together. I don't know. Have you noticed that? Any of you noticed that when you buy organic produce, it seems to last a little longer? It just dries on you? Okay, well, that's the energy that holds it together, and that's trace minerals. That's what's missing. First of all, stop going to the good old boys thing. Even if you have to buy, because it may seem like a little expensive because you have to pay for shipping and stuff like that. You know, like, this is rock dust over here. And I brought it so you can play with it and feel it. And rock dust is Mother Nature's source of minerals, the trace minerals. I actually eat this stuff. It's not too bad. There are different kinds of companies you can get it. I get my trace minerals. I put it in my hair. Feed my dog with it. Feed everything, because we need the same, very same identical trace minerals. And the minerals is what gives you the energy, see? So what you need to do is switch over to more organic stuff, which will have higher energy, right? You put that in your compost setup. If you have organically grown alfalfa meal, so I buy a product called Bradfield's Organic Fertilizer. Basically, it's alfalfa-based fertilizer. It's just alfalfa meal. Good alfalfa meal is 3-2-2, something like that, see? 3% nitrogen. You take some alfalfa meal, put that in your compost setup, that's going to cook up. It's going to heat up, really help it cook up. So you need to include some rock dust into your process, okay? So your cottonseed meal, alfalfa meal, just buy organic sources of those. But instead, one more thing I would add to that, even the chicken manure is fine, except that, you know, you have to be careful with the chicken manure because, again, if it doesn't come from some reputable organic company, you know it's going to have something in it. You just know it. It could probably have some. It needs to be labeled. It needs to say something in the company. It needs to have something about the company saying, well, we're natural, we're organic, we wild-range chickens. This comes from organic chickens. Something that says, because otherwise it probably comes from that place in Fayetteville. What's the name of that chicken place? You all know what I'm talking about?
Foster Farm?
Not Foster, no. There's another one.
In Arkansas.
One that's burned down. In Arkansas. It's in Arkansas. It's a big... huh? No. I know the name off the bat, but it's not that one. I saw it was in Arkansas. Huh?
Randall.
What's wrong with you people? No. Anyway, that's it. What was it?
Tyson.
That's the one. And I don't want to say anything bad about them or anything, except that, you know, their chickens are sick and there's diseases. And, of course, the manure is going to be highly diseased. Have that, your bacteria you're breathing in, you know. You said you were getting a rash. That could be coming from the chicken manure, if it's not organic, from organic sources and stuff. Because I go out to a farm and the chickens are naturally fed, use their feathers, their manure. Everything's really high energy. You don't have the real strong, bad smell. So I was just... It's like eating, you know, make sure your sources, what you're coming, what you're getting from, because that's what you put in is what you get out of it, okay? I would definitely find a source of rock dust. There's some pamphlets, information over some local sources here because the shipping would be less. I buy stuff. This comes from, this actually comes from Palm Springs. it's not a rock dust company. They are it's called A1 Grit. And they basically sell stuff for construction. It's a big quarry, and they mine things up. You know, they dig things up, and they have all different things for concrete and different pebbles and different size. This is their fine dust, which is like they don't sell it. They sort of like sits there. You know, next door there's a strawberry farm, and I talk to the guy, and every time I go there, get rock dust, I go over and get free strawberries, and the guy says he has giant strawberries, and he doesn't feed them, because the wind blows the dust over, and that's his fertilizer right there, you know. And they're pest-free, and it's just disease-free, and delicious, and sweet, and shit. And I told the company, I said, you know, you should be selling this to gardeners. And you know what gold is? You don't give away gold, you sell it. Well, you hear you got a product that's like better than gold, and of course, they don't want to get into it. I had to go through all this just to get a couple of pickup load worth of stuff that they're throwing away, you know. So there are other companies in Las Vegas and Southern California that are mining it now and making it available to people because that's what you want. It's you want finely ground. Rock dust is called that because it's finely ground up minerals and Mother Nature's way, and it feeds it back. It has iron, magnesium, and the bacteria, see, you're getting some form of bacteria with a chicken manure because that has some type of bacteria in it. See, different animals, their tummy has different bacteria in it, okay? I've learned to blend the different kinds of bacteria together to really get your compost cooking up. One of the things, not too many people have access to animal manure. So if you know of a farm, you know, or a zoo, you can go get stuff. So that's why one of the companies that I work with, there's two of them, one called Nitron and another one called AgriGrow. And what they sell is a liquid enzyme bacterial product that brings the bacteria back into the soil, back into the compost. So you spray it on the property, brings the bacteria, because the city water kills bacteria. You know, they put chlorine in the city water, right? You know how you're supposed to moisture your compost? You pour a little water in your compost, right? You don't? So you're not adding any moisture to the compost? Yeah, you should be adding some moisture to. Well, if it gets soggy, it won't work, but it needs water for the steam to come up and energy to come up. But if you're adding the city water, it will kill it right off the bat. That's why in the sixth grade, I started looking around. See, instead of doing a newspaper route, I did a gardening service. And I started doing ant treatments and natural tree care and all that stuff in the sixth grade. And so I wanted to clean the water, so I went on and got a shower filter. All this is a shower filter been converted to work on a hose. This is called Paragon. It's just a nice big one. But you go in, get in, and this is stronger. That's why I get it. You know, you have to get these shower filters that are like really thin little plastic things, and before you know they break, you know. And all this is a filter. It actually filters out the chlorine water, and I hook it up to the hose. And then that's the water that I use in my garden when I'm feeding or when I'm giving it to compost and where I'm making compost tea. By the way, this is one of the ones that's going to be given away today, you know. And so you'll find that that you need to add the rock dust to the process. Not only the compost, but the whole property. And this will solve your problem. Because the reason why, see, the weed and feed, any chemical lawn fertilizer kills the soil. It sterilizes the soil over many, many years of using it over and over and over again. That's what it does. It kills the earthworm population. It kills the natural bacteria that's found in the soil. It causes imbalance. It gets worse and worse and worse. You end up having to do more to get the same amount out. And then the lawn doesn't look as good. It starts to get more other diseases. Other things start to happen. And before you know it, you can't control it. And it goes right back down to the type of food. Because like in the human body, if you eat junk food, that's what you're going to be junky, right? You know, if you get healthy food, you'll be healthier. And so most chemical fertilizers are almost, okay, I was going to say most, all chemical fertilizers are deficient in what? The trace minerals. You'll have some of them say fortified with copper, right? Or they say they may have some magnesium in there. But you need over 76 trace minerals to make everything function right. And if the trace minerals are not available, the bacteria starts to disappear. You know, do you have a lot of earthworms on the lawn? Have you ever dug underneath and see if there's any earthworms?
Not that many. They're in the garden area.
Yeah, right. Well, see, they'll stay. They know what's going on. I'm not going on their lawn. You're kidding me? I'm over here, you know? But that's what you want. You want to be able to, you know how you test for earthworms? You get a coffee can, big coffee can, you flip it upside down, you know, you fill it with water, you take it, stick it in the ground, right? And then you come back in about an hour, you open up, if you have earthworms, they'll be up there going, that water, get out, you know, because the water will come out. I don't know, after rain, you see the earthworms come up, you know. But you need a massive, you need the earthworms to grow under there because the more earthworms, you know, earthworms eat snail eggs. How's that for starters, okay? So what you need to do is you need to Listen to your wife more. I've saved a lot of marriages. People say, you know, Andy, I'm leaving him if he sprays one more time. So I talked to him, listen, you know, you don't care what you spray as long as it does its thing, you know. You don't care what you're putting. Most of us good old boys, we don't care what we put down as long as it works, you know. Just give me something, you know. And so, and I'm sure you seem like a nice man, you know. You want to keep her happy. She's going to leave you. No, she's not going to. Okay, so. Yeah, let me. So, all you really have to do is pay more attention to the minerals that are coming into your property. So by applying rock dust several times a year, spring and in the fall is a good time. It's just during the rainy season, you know, just when it starts to rain, that's a good time. We call it a rock dust party. You sprinkle a little bit of rock dust. This 50-pound bag does acres and acres. As a matter of fact, I've had it for a couple of years now. And what I do, and it's real sneaky, I make a tea out of it, a rock dust tea, a cup, pantyhose, let it sit in clean water. You can, one cup of rock dust would do 50 gallons of water. Maybe 100 gallons because you do it twice, you know. And then you take that and you spray that. It becomes a foliar feeding, see. You're feeding the minerals to the plant. You still got to add some to the soil. So I would do that during the rainy season because that's Mother Nature water it in. It's just a little bit, very thinly all over the place. Do it twice a year, a dash here in your compost. When you're making a compost, a little pinch as you go, see. That'll increase the minerals, which will, then you gotta say, well, where's the bacteria? Because you gotta have the bacteria to eat the minerals. Okay? So that's why, any source of animal manure is good except carnivorous, because they'll pass a parasite along. You know, I used to go to the zoo and get lion and tiger and elephant poo-poo. You know? And the guy says, well, we can't give you the lion tiger today because it's being quarantined, because sometimes they get sick and they won't let you have their sick poo-poo, you know? But the elephant is the two richest manures are the smallest, which is the worm, and the biggest was the elephant. So I used to go to Barnum and Bailey's Ringling Brothers Circus in Florida when I lived. They would call me up and say, Andy, we have a poo-poo problem. Because they have 100 elephants, you know, and this poor guy's shoveling, you know. And then I tell you to shovel this stuff, because by the time he made it to the other end, he turned around and the elephant. And the guy said, what should I do with all this poo-poo? You want it? It'd be great stuff. And I said, okay, so I experimented with it. And I actually let it sit, and it gets hard. And I get a chainsaw, and I cut little blocks out. And I call that one Organa Gold. I wrapped it up, and I sold it as composted elephant manure. And I took it to the lab, and it's the most rich. It's just as rich as earthworm. You know, earthworm casings. Earthworms, they go to the bathroom, too. They have poo-poo, you know. And they, people sell that. You can actually make an earthworm bed. And every once in a while, you take all the worms out and you spin them out to separate the soil and the earthworm, and you sell the soil. That's called earthworm casings. Very, very rich in minerals and bacteria and all that stuff. So you need to increase your earthworm population. I would actually go out and buy earthworms and start introducing them. You know, or if you have earthworms in your garden where there's a lot of them, take them over and put them in the lawn. Some will die, but eventually if you stop using the chemical fertilizer, because what you're going to have to do is, see, if you stop using that lawn fertilizer, the lawn won't look very good for a while, even if you switch to organic. Because the organic system is like bypassing your stomach. As if I put a needle right here and said, and for food, you know how when people are sick, they got a little needle and a little thing standing up and they're being intravenously fed? Well, if I just did that, I would die because my stomach will eventually stop working and I would die from malnutrition, no matter how much food they gave me. Right? The same thing with plants. Plants have root systems, and root systems have hairs on them normally, and that's the way they absorb stuff. But when you give them chemically, it burns off the hair. So they just have these root systems. There's nothing down there working. You know what I mean? And it causes stress. High nitrogen is the number one problem with diseases and pests anywhere, in the garden and everything. Okay? So in order to switch over, you have to give yourself a year. See, there's two things that are switching over. You are switching over, and the garden is switching over. So you train yourself, your brain, to say, well, instead of giving it the weed and feed two or three times a year, I'm going to start slowly switching from 100% chemical. The first year I'll be like 80% chemical. You know, you have to switch it over. The first, you know, spring, you say, okay, I'm going to use half as much of the weed and feed, and I'm going to find something else to use instead. The second time, you're going to say, I'm going to use a third as much the weed and feed, and you know, and by the end of the year, the cycle, you say, okay, I'm only 10% of the, and I wouldn't even use the weed and feed. I would substitute some other kind of chemical fertilizer, take away the weed and feed part, because that's really very bad. I'll give you an example of how bad it is that I have over 7,000 members. Somebody, a little girl was getting sick, And she had, and the doctors did a spinal tap on her, and it said, you have some kind of spinal meningitis. You have all the symptoms, but we don't see anything in your spine. So he was a smart doctor. He went to the person's hall and walked around and said, this is the weed and feed. There's a chemical in the weed and feed. That's what he found in the little girl. So this was Dr. Bernard Jensen. It was a different doctor. It was another doctor, and he said, call Andy up. This is Miami, and I went to him, and within 6 months, all the symptoms went away because the guy stopped using the weed and feed, started feeding it more natural compost. See if you top dress it along with compost, top dress it with rock dust. There are lots of organic fertilizers on the market. As a matter of fact, in terms of what you can use to as a weed control, it's called corn gluten. Corn gluten. And the many companies sell it, and one of them is called WOW. Without weeds. And it's also a fertilizer. So what they found out that what you do is, because it's basically high protein. And protein, weeds grow in mineral deficient soil, and also they hate protein rich soil. And the two go together. The more protein, the more minerals you got, the more protein you get, the more sugar content you get in the plant. See, so, and I used to give a weed talk, you can tell the condition of the soil by what weeds are growing on the soil. Offhand, I would say your pH is way off. And if you ever, you should have a soil test and check your pH level, because if it's too high, then that's where your weeds are, problem are coming from. More than likely, it's way too low, because one of the problems using chemical fertilizer over and over again, it reduces the pH. It becomes very acid, very acidic. You want to always counterbalance it. The compost, that's why compost is alkaline. It counterbalances the acidity, you know. You put a layer thick enough to your heart, you don't even see the lawn. You say, my God, I'm going to kill the lawn. And you do that in the spring and in the fall. It's called top dressing the lawn. And before you do that, you give it a good layer of the rock dust. And what I use are these shoes these spikes you put on your shoes. They have little, look like golf shoes. They got big spikes, you know. And you just literally go up and down and punch holes in the soil. And then you sprinkle the rock dust. Then you put the compost down. And then you rake it in, let it water it in, it'll really help the root systems of the lawn to grow bigger. That's the other thing is, how often are you watering the lawn? Every day? See, that's a no-no. No. Because the root systems are stationed, you know, there's no reason for them to go down and be deep. And the bigger the, you know, a lawn root system should go down 3 to 4 feet. An average lettuce, a little lettuce, goes down 12 feet, the root system. Yes. Yeah, right. You know, you can only go down as far as that little root can dig its end. And this clay stuff gets harder and harder. You know, it doesn't really go down too far. You know, that's.
I learned that. I tried that watering maybe twice a week, but for extended periods. I found out where I live, the ground is very sandy and rocky, and water just percolates away.
Right.
And not until I started watering every day, but in short bursts, did my lawn actually come back green?
Okay, but are you feeding your lawn organically?
I don't do much of anything.
Well, there you go. See, now, if you were feeding your lawn organically, they would be stronger, and they can go longer without water. Basically, you have weak lawn that needs to be taken care of more often. It just can't handle that, and it's just very weak as it is, and that's why you need to feed it. Just give it a little bit of water just before it conks out, so to speak, you know. And so that's not really the best ideal way to deal with that scenario, because you're opening yourself up to one disease or one problem or another that will come about, because that's what you're asking for, see? So you need to pay more attention to it. Feed it a good organic food. Find a good organic lawn food. There's many of them. I brought you some sources right over there you can choose from, you know. I use the Bradfield because it's a little pelletized. You sprinkle it out. It lasts for 4 months. 4 months. It was just feeds in, and you can sprinkle it. I feed my lawns 4 times a year, you know, and I also spray it, feeding it. I use it's called the Easy Grow Unit. You hook it up to your lawn, to your hose, put your food in there, and then you're feeding. I feed the fish emulsion, seaweed. I feed my lawns almost, I have one customer, I go twice a week. Every time I go there, I'm feeding everything. But you feed it a little bit on a regular basis. The chemicals is really high and stuff. The idea of organics is there's a difference between eating food every 6 months or having a nice, like, dinner every year, every day for a human being. I mean, you would get really stressed out if you had to wait to eat, and then you only got to eat a lot, and you had to wait again to eat. That's what happens with the chemicals. You know, they disappear very fast. As a matter of fact, that's why they made like Osmocote and all these other ones, little pellets, to try to make it last a little longer. Okay? But organic system is slightly different. You don't worry about nitrogen. That's the last thing on your mind is the nitrogen. You'll find it by giving all a variety of different food, the nitrogen. For example, I give coffee to my lawn, to my whole place. I go to Starbucks, and even though it's not organic, I tell myself, well, the customers already got all the chemicals. The coffee they drank, they got all the chemicals. The coffee grind is nothing left, you know, except coffee grind. 2% nitrogen, for starters, is acidic. So it depends on your soil environment. For example, where I live in Malibu, certain area, one part of the street, the soil is acidic, another part is acid, you know what I mean? I mean, acidic and alkaline, you know, so I can, and roses and citruses and vegetables all like love coffee. Your lawn will love the coffee. And you literally can take coffee grinds, right, sprinkle it on the lawn, break it in. It'll smell like coffee. People will come, having coffee, are you? You know? Or you can make a tea out of it. What I tell people is make a batch of coffee for yourself, make another batch for the plants. So you have the little coffee maker, you grind up your coffee, put it in there, make a batch for you, right? Then make another batch of the coffee, the actual coffee. And I've actually sprayed them hot. You know, you take coffee when it's boiling hot, put it in your sprayer, and try to run out as fast as you can and spray your plants, because by the time you get out, the coffee's already cooling off, you know what I mean? But you'll think that it would burn your plants. It doesn't, because when it gets mist, it cools off in the air, but it's just hot enough. Just a few degrees hot enough that the bugs will kill the bugs that dead. Just plain hot water. I got a man who has this device. He goes on the field, heats up the water, and he sprays hot water on the plants. People think you're burning the plants, but it cools off just enough. But the temperature is enough to kill the bugs. So I tell people to make coffee, cream, and sugar. Plants love that. The coffee, what's in the coffee? All kinds of, if it's organically grown, it'd be richer in minerals and stuff. If it's not, it still has iron, magnesium, oh, you know, a bunch of different stuff in it. But it's acidic, okay? Okay. Dances with ants. Was that what's for me? Am I on time? What was I talking about? Coffee, cream, and sugar, right? So the cream, what is cream in it? Anybody know? Milk? Make a guess. Well, it's got protein, it's got calcium, fortified with calcium, vitamin D, but it also has its own bacteria. Right? When it goes bad, you know the bacteria went bad, right? Right? It has a good bacteria. That bacteria is actually good for the plant, because the bacteria is the very same plant bacteria that you need. And of course, the sugar. What's sugar? Plants? You all know plants convert, you know what photosynthesis, excuse me, miss? Hi. Am I boring you?
Yeah.
I can tap dance you and I can do this. Oh, mommy, how I love you, how I love you. Now, do you know what photosynthesis is? You don't. And you're a gardener, huh? What do you think plants are trying to do when they look at the sun? Hey, Mr. Sun, I love you. Give me... What is it? They get the sunlight, right? And it goes on their leaves. And what happens inside the plant? Plants make sugar. See, that's what photosynthesis is all about, taking the sunlight and converting it into sugar. See, we don't use sugar the same way plants do. You can't eat a pound of sugar. Go, but you can take a sugar and give it to plants. And people say, aren't you feeding the ants and stuff? If you foliar feed, see, a long time ago, remember in the sixth grade, I get molasses and added that's coffee, cream, and sugar and spray. People say, you're crazy. But I talked to one farmer about it, and the farmer started doing it, and it raised the energy level of his crops, pests disappeared, and he goes, now all, and I didn't say I started it, and, you know, I realized that I don't invent anything. This guy gave me an old farmer's almanac, 1805, has a lot of stuff that I've been saying right in there. So I decided a long time ago, I don't invent it, I'm just a good gardener, just recycling all the information over again. And farmers are now using molasses and learning how to spray on their plants. There's a device called a refractometer, and you can easily use it on yours, because basically this was invented by a cook. You know how you go shopping, you want to get the best foods you can, the highest energy, and it looks really good. And, my wife says, don't touch that, that looks awful. Oh, okay. I used to go with a pendulum, or I used to go pray for a while, do all these things, have a group of people, hold hands to see which is the produce. So this guy invented a refractometer. You just take the food, and of course you have to buy that little piece, but you figure if that was good, the rest of them are God. And you take a little bit and put a drop on this device and you look through it and it tells you the BRICS level, B-R-I-X. BRICS is sugar. Basically how much sugar the plant has. The higher the sugar level, the more mineral it has and the more energy it has. The healthier it is. And the sweeter it is. You know, when you eat stuff, it's real sweet. You can tell the difference between a good fruit and another by the sweetness, right? You know? When I eat mangoes, I just got back from Miami. I went to Homestead and I said, 20 pounds of mango, please. And I sat there, ate it and rubbed it on my body. It was like, ugh, get this guy away from me. You know, papayas. I used to be a fruitarian until I came here. I'm dying for any fruit. I mean, you know, there's like no fruit around here, you know. And a friend of mine sent me this mangoes like that. People say, what is that? Oh, my God. Anyway, what was I talking about? Anybody knows? Sugar. Yeah, which is, you can tell. I don't need sugar. I convert sunlight to sugar. It's my problem. What was that? Sugar. Okay, so, and it's bricks, you know. The higher the bricks. So what you do is, like in your lawn, I go and take a lawn, take a couple of blades of the grass, put a little bit of water, distilled clean water, crush it so you have a chlorophyll, put a drop on it, you can see the level of it. I do that with trees, I do that with everything. Because the higher the energy level, the less disease and the less pests are going to come around. So these are just indicators that you just need to feed a little bit better. Treat the lawn organically. People say, I'm not going to eat the lawn, so why does it have to be organic? Well, you know, you water less because the root systems are deeper. I can go for a week and I water the lawn and the next door neighbor's lawn dries right up and this lawn is looking beautiful. That's how I can tell. When the plants are stressed out and you don't water for a few days, they go, ooh, you know, they're weak. Something's going on with the root systems that's not working. And that's all it is with weeds. If they're just growing and an environment is perfect for them, you change the environment, the weeds will just start disappear, start going. All that really means is make it a little richer, pay more attention to the food that you're feeding the lawn. Sour milk. Sour milk is, I actually buy a gallon of milk, drive around with, and put it in my truck and on a van, drive around for a few days, open up, oh, it's ready. And I don't use it straight, add it with water. People say, I use the sour milk straight and boy, it's a stink. It won't burn anything, but it's just overdoing it. A cup of milk, whether it be, and people say, well, should I use whole milk or do you say, you know, low fat? Yeah, but whatever, you know, the best is the raw milk, right out of the cow, you know. I used to live on a farm, and I remember my mother taking raw milk and make some to eat, and she would take some and spray her roses with it and spray all kinds of things with it. This was my great, great, great grandmother. What was the question? Yeah. Yeah, okay, so then, any more questions about compost? Did I all get you really confused? You look really confused. You said they're going, you should have brought a tape.
And if you don't put, I don't have a compost bin, but I mix it in with my other compost leaves and stuff. Can you get too much on your roses?
I've never really added more. I've learned that too much of a good thing is bad too. You know, to dump a pound of coffee grounds under a rose. Try it out and see what happens. I don't think it'll burn it. It won't do anything to it. It just might be overdoing it. Some of it won't be available, I suppose. What happens is that by putting coffee grounds just under your roses, you're increasing the earthworm population. They love that coffee grounds. And the more earthworms you got under there, the less you got to feed the roses because the earthworms are feeding it for you, more or less. You know, so a cup is usually a cup of coffee grounds under a rose once a month is really more than enough. You still got to feed it some other things. They love alfalfa meal. That's one of the favorite things. I actually take alfalfa meal, make a tea out of it, and spray it. Because alfalfa has another source of bacteria, plus it's also nitrogen and different minerals. So you put in the pantyhose. People send me, I'm on PBS, and I talk about pantyhoses a lot. I get in the mail pantyhoses. My wife says, something you want to tell me, dear? I go, I came back from Miami, and this lady's sending me pantyhoses from Miami. I'm going, I told you not to send it to this address. No. So you just put it in the pantyhose, tie it up. And what I did wrong, I used to go out and buy I made $30 for a pantyhose. That's just too much, isn't it? My wife said, what are you doing? You can go to, I go to a thrift store, you know, and they're hanging there, you know, and I get all the, and I found you can get short legs and long legs, all the different sizes. It doesn't make any difference. You just put them in the pantyhose, one cup, tie it and make a tea out of it. And spray it. Let it sit overnight. Add a dash of molasses to it, you know, and spray it. And the alfalfa meal, and that would be excellent for the lawn too. Alfalfa meal is very good. By the way, you can immediately get rid of the weeds by making a vinegar mixture, vinegar and water. I usually add a quart of vinegar to a gallon of water, and you can spray that area where the weeds are at. You come back in a few days, and they'll be still shriveled up. It takes a little bit of time, yes. No, they love it. The lawn will love it. Oh, yeah, vinegar is one of the best things to feed your all your plants, not straight vinegar. Vinegar is what? Fermented sugar. When I was in the sixth grade, remember I did the vegetable garden? Well, I decided I wasn't going to feed it to conventional chemicals. The teacher showed up, and I said, no, we don't want that. I was in the paper, you know. My mother was there fighting the teacher, you know. So I went out, and I grocery shop. I figured, I'm just going to get things in the grocery. And I started feeding vinegar and water, and it makes the roses or vegetables, everything, because it's just fermented sugar. You spray it out, and they want the sugar. They take it, boom. And if it's good organic vinegar or good energy vinegar, like apple cider vinegar, stuff like that, makes the lawn nice, deep, and green. It makes it green without even adding any nitrogen to it. Weeds will do in a mineral-deficient environment and a low-energy environment. So if you raise the energy and you're automatically raising the mineral levels, weeds will just fade away. They can't grow in that environment. So usually when you have weeds growing in your lawn or in your garden or anywhere like that, raise the energy level. You raise the energy level by increasing the minerals, by increasing the bacteria, and you do it slowly. See, chemical, the energy level goes like that, but then it goes right back down lower than you were before. I don't know about you, but whenever I eat sugar, I walk around for days going, and my doctor says, you had sugar, didn't you? yeah. For days, and boy, do I feel sick afterwards. Same thing with the plants. They get really, you know, yes.
Well, that St. Augustine grass, isn't it kind of a weed to start with? Is vinegar worse than that, or is it?
I don't think of St. Augustine as a weed. I think of it as a grass. I have several customers who have, that's what they have, and we just turn them into a lawn. And no, it's not, that's just, see, what happens is, you know, you have man-made lawns. And a lot of things have mutated, so to speak, to grow that way. So St. Augustine really, it's not actually a weed anymore. You know, you can feed it and give it minerals and make it a nice St. Augustine lawn. As a matter of fact, I used to live in St. Augustine. So, and that was where it was. It's a nice St. Augustine lawn. Any more questions about compost?
About water. The soil around on mine is 50% rock underneath.
Yeah. Well, see, you're going to have to, you know, the root systems will only go down as far as there's any soil to go down to, you know. And I tell people, if you're going to make a lawn, really amend the soil as best as you can before you put the lawn in, because you won't get the chance afterwards. Then what you have to do is you have to top dress. That's the reason why you top dress your lawn on a regular basis. You had a question.
Yeah, well, I'm having St. Augustine lawn installed in a few days, and they're going to amend the soil and go to the soil tomorrow.
As far down as they can go, 2 or 3 feet.
Oh, okay.
That would be good. You don't have to go do like this one guy did 8 feet. You know, it's like, are you in there? Yeah. You know, 2 or 3 feet is more than enough, and that's the ideal time to add the rock dust to it. Yeah.
So 2 or 3 feet is more than enough.
Yeah, 2 or 3. If you can go down, you know, 3 feet, that's more than enough. And while you're rototilling, throw some compost on it, a little bit of rock dust. Because that's the last chance you're going to be able to be down there. As much coffee grinds as you can get, throw down there, rototill all that together, let it sit for a few days, then you're doing sod, and then put the sod in the seed. Now, sod is chemically grown, so the sod is going to want to be fed chemically. You see? It's going to say, give me the food. Also, you know, they spray it like crazy already, so the sod already has a pesticide in it. So what's going to happen if you're going to be organic? The pesticide and the food is going to disappear very fast, and it's going to want to get fed. So you have to do a little transition period and find the right kind of fertilizer to feed it, yet at the same time switch over within, you know, so in other words, don't go straight organic the first time because the sod is not going to like it. And so you want to find some kind of transition fertilizer that has as much minerals as possible, but at the same time, like what I would do is top dress it with compost, very lightly with compost, just when you first put the sod down, okay? You don't need to feed it because it already has all the food and stuff it needs. But in a few weeks, about 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to need a feeding. Foliar feeding is the best way. You know, you have to water regularly. They tell you water regularly so it doesn't dry out and all that stuff. Right, what I do is I put an inline feeder system in the sprinkler system. There's a little device you could hook up to the sprinkler system. You can put your food in there, and when the sprinklers go down, they're getting fed. Yeah. And one of the best things to feed it now is a transitional thing is fish emulsion. Fish emulsion usually is 5% nitrogen. Avoid any urea product. You'll say, fish emulsion, urea. You don't want it with urea. Urea kills the soil. Urea has been banned in many states except California because they figured the ocean is far from being polluted. I love that. Oh, and now they're saying, it's coming back. You know, they had this one city was is exempt from being environmentally sound. In other words, they were told they can take their toxic and take this pipe 4 miles out in the ocean and dump it out there because it'll be a long time if ever it comes back. Now they're saying the toxins are coming back. How could that be? Anyway, what was I talking about? Ants. Oh, yeah, 11:15. I'm supposed to start talking about a break at 11:15. So we got, okay, the ants. I have to go on to ants because we have to take a break at 11:15. That means I got 20 minutes to talk about something that took all my whole life to do. Ants. Who has an ant problem?
Everyone in Glendale.
Tough. Let's go on to the next thing. Okay, now. Why? I started doing ant treatments in the sixth grade. I got tired because my mother would go and spray the R thing. I'm not allowed to mention certain words because they keep suing me. And I love it, but it costs me money every time I go to court and I win, you know. And I was trying to get, if you're a lawyer, anybody that's a lawyer here wants to do it for free, you know, the four-letter R word, you know what I'm talking about? You know, on TV, the roaches come on, they say, that one? Yeah, you know, she knows what I'm talking about. I'm not supposed to, because they get upset when I tell them this. That's more toxic than melatonin could ever be. Okay, and they change the formula because the bugs keep changing. You know, they change the formula, make it stronger. What was I talking about? Ants, okay. All right, so I decided I was going to see what's going on with them. Do you know the ants are totally female-run organization? Totally run by ladies. All the guys do is, close your ears, dear. Just put your ears in. All they do is have sex. What? You didn't? You heard that. She's going, oh, God. Once a year, the queen says, it's time to have babies or whatever and get 400 males, and the one male that makes it, they go off and have a new family, and there are other 399 males. They walk around for 2 days going, did you get any? No, I didn't get any. And they die, you know. You know, I'm coming back as a male ant because it's a wonderful life. You just sit around and drink nectar, and I think they smoke little cigars. I don't know. But it's totally run by females. It's a totally female-run organization. The workers are females. The soldiers. You ever watch the ants? You have these big ants with the hawk. They have the claws. And they're standing by, and as they walk by, they're guarding. Those are ladies. They're not guys. They're ladies. I found this. I read a book called Do Ants Sleep? And I started doing research. And I said, well, I'm going to start. First, I'll start in my home. So I bought an Uncle Milton's ant farm. Okay. And it says here, order, here's where you order the ants. I go, I'm not going to order ants. I have my own ants. And I'm just going to, you know, so what I did was my parents went away for one summer. I'm the oldest in my family. So I broke them in. I break them in first. I do things and then the rest of the brothers can do it. Oh, no big deal. But when I do it, you did what? You know, so they went away. Says, you're in charge. I went, yes. Yes. That was the year I blew up my garage. I bought a chemical kit, you know. I said, do not mix. I said, boom. Oh, that's what happened. So I cut a hole. I had this man come, a handyman come, and he cut a hole in the kitchen wall and put the Uncle Milton's ant farm up there. I was going to surprise my parents when they come back. And they have these little tubes, and you're supposed to, the tube runs from one part of the ant farm to another part. And you think the ants are stupid. They go for a walk, and they end up right back where they were. It says, delicious. So I had the tubes going outside and had one tube inside. You see, the tubes are going outside. So the ants would go into the tube. I would feed them in the Uncle Milton's ant farm thing. People can see the ants and all that stuff, and they will all leave. And I would show people what do you do inside the house to keep the ants out. I figure, well, they're smart. I'm smarter than they are. See, the ants have you trained. You don't know it, but they have you trained. And they have little meetings every month and say, you know, let's go to this person's home. This is where the food is. This is what's going on. Remember, they're ladies. They're involved. What you tell one lady, they all know. They're highly social. They're very advanced. They got lawyers. You know they have underground farms? You know what aphids are, right? Where they're wild aphids and they're herded aphids. 90% of the aphids are herded by the ants. They move them from one part of the plant to the other. The ants don't actually, suck on a plant. They get the aphids to do the work, and they milk the aphids for their nectar. My only question is, if they're a lady, how come they don't clean up after themselves? Because usually they do all this nectar and walk away, and they leave nectar everywhere, and that's where you get the funguses and diseases, and all the creatures come around for their nectar. You know what nectar is? It's a sweet thing that the aphids give away. If you look at a picture of an aphid, it looks just like a cow, a little milking thing, you know? What was I talking about? I have to keep track because I'm really spacey. I'm a genius. I'm working on a song in my brain. I write music now. Somebody gave me a music program and for Christmas. I've been writing classical and all kinds of music and all chords related to the garden. I just finished doing it's called Earthworm Suit. Earthworm Suit? 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 Yeah, it's about two earthworms. Never mind. In the sixth grade, I decided to follow this one ant. I decided I'm going to follow an ant around for as long as I can and see what the ants do, what's going on, you know. And I have the lumps to prove it. I have all kinds of lumps because I've always been this height. My mother, finally, she told me the other day, she said, I found you in the front steps. That's why you're so different than the rest of your brothers. I go, oh, thanks, Mom. She's 89, you know. He says, yeah. I said, how come I'm so different? The rest of my brothers are about that big, they beard, football, everything. And I'm not like him at all. I said, well, they would be in watching football. My mother and I would be gardening. You know, instead of doing a lemonade stand, I did a cow patty stand, a cow patty. And I decided it's no good if it's dried. I put them really fresh, you know. And I included a part of the service. I would bury them for you under roses or fruit trees. That was part of the service. That shows you, you know, out there. Anyway, so I followed the ant around, and the police officer one day brought me home. I was unconscious. Is this your son? Yeah. Dad says, yeah, hey, lie him over there. And I'm like, oh. So the police officer got me a safari hat so I can walk around and I knock myself out. And I decided, I told the teacher that I killed all these ants trying to figure out how to just identify. So I thought I'd get a piece of red ink, you know, put it on the ant, a red paint, you know, so I could follow the ant around. I would kill the ant. Oh, sorry. Breathe. So the teacher says, you're going to inject him with this, this stuff that's radioactive you inject in the body, so then look at it and see what's going on. So we did that. We injected an ant colony in Uncle Milton's ant farm, and it turns out that the whole neighborhood, I made it in the paper, all the ants were glowing in that whole block. And it made in the paper, kids, science project, radioactive ants, you know. You know, something like that. And people will walk around at night, go, look at the ants, they're glowing. What's going on here? And people will come and look and say, oh, it was you that did that. You know, yeah, it was me. I did it. I learned a lot about them. And that was just, I decided I was going to feed the ants. I was on a roll. They were gone. So I got a beehive and put it on the other side, on the other wall. So I figured, okay, and the honey, ants, you know, we'll have a source. First week, the ants went and invaded the bees, and they were having this fight, and I had to separate them. I said, we're friends. The bees are also a totally female-run organization. So you get two female-run organizations. And finally, they say, all right, let's work together. And the ants stopped going over there because I would take the honey, and that's what I would feed the thing. You know, people come by and sell honey jars. You know, the parents came and said, well, you did what? But that I solved their ant problem. And all the ants want is food and water. That's all they do. They want, they're involved in everything on your property. See, the ants control 75% of what goes on your property. Which would you rather have, ants or termites? And you have 5 seconds to answer that question. Ants. Somebody said ants. I have yet to, in all the years I've been doing this, not one person said, termites, termites, I'll take the termites. Right? Yes.
I see a lot of ants going up into your attic. Is that an indication that termites up there they're after?
One of two things. More likely you have carpenter ants. People don't understand that there's a difference between termites and carpenter ants, and this is very little difference. Carpenter ants work their way through the woods. You hear the little voices, hi-ho, because they're females. Remember, they're hi-ho, hi. They're female voices. They're called carpenter ants because they work their way through the woods. They don't eat the wood. You have a little pile of wood and everything. And remember when you have sex? Forget about it. They have the wings. The ants have wings, just like the termites, and they go all off and flying, right? So there's a big difference. And I tell people, this is how you can tell between termites and ants. Termites are males. There's just the queen, and they have all the slave males. Where ants are the opposite, they're all ladies with just a few males, okay? And the way you can tell the difference is, it's real easy for me. I think of a woman with a slim shape. I think of a male with a big tummy. Right? You know, guys walk around with big tummies. Females are always very slender, you know. So if you look at the body of a dead termite and the body of a dead carpenter ant, the dead carpenter ant will have the slim female body shape. The termite will be tummy-ish, right? That's one way you look at it. You can look at, because they look identical. They do the same thing, you see. And the wings are slightly different. The veins of the wings on the termite, they go through the center, then they come out, whereas the veins on the ant, they all start from one point and come out. You can look at and tell by the veins. There are lots of other different things. The antennas, the way the antennas are set up. But the point is, people get the two confused. Ah, termites. Termite company, oh, termite, tend your house. But they're really carpenter ants that you have. So more likely, one or two things are happening. You could have carpenter ants because they're going up there and getting, they're going into the wood, and they basically make their home in the wood and stuff, but they still have to be connected to the earth. Or you have, they're going up and going after, they're invading the termite, because that's what they do. They invade their colonies and get their eggs, and, you know. The way you can tell is if it's all one, you know, there should be some kind of traffic coming back. So if you only see them going that way, and you don't see anybody coming back, that's a little suspicious because they have to be bringing back the bodies. Normally you will see them carrying the eggs, you know, you know, coming back. You know, saying, oh, okay, so they're attacking the termites, you leave them alone, that's great. But if they're going up, then more likely they're probably establishing a home, which is what you don't want, because they can do the damage too. And that's why if you follow the first chapter of the book called Dances with Ants, I saw the dances with wolves. I said, this is it, because see, that's what you have to do. See, the ants are so smart, you have to retrain them. And don't do like people do. I got 5 steps, they went to 5th step. Anyway, I skipped 1 through 4, I went right to step 5. It isn't working. I go, yeah, right, because you didn't train them. You didn't. You have to retrain them again to go for their source of food and water. It's really very easy. As a matter of fact, I teach kids how to do this. There's no poison involved in it at all. As a matter of fact, a lot of my customers tell me, Andy, let me get this straight. I'm paying you to feed the ants. I go, yeah, you're too stupid to do yourself, too wealthy, whatever, it's fine. My rates are going up. Remember, I used to charge 25 cents for ant treatments. Now I charge a lot more than that. And I keep raising it, and they keep hiring me. I say, what's wrong with you people? You know? So the deal with the ants is that you have to, first of all, tell them where you don't want them to be. And that's why I use the Dr. Bronner soap. When I went out, I said, well, what am I going to spray to teach the ants I don't want them to be here? Because, you know, ants leave little trails. They know exactly where they're going. So you have to confuse them. If you confuse the ants, they say, oh, back off, let's wait and see what's going on. Unlike us humans, we continue on. Ants, most creatures will say, well, something's wrong here, and I'm going to have to just take a break, you know. And when they come back, I usually find them a different source of food. That's why I call it ant cafes, basically a little finished birdhouse. So what you do is you spray inside the house to drive the ants out. Any kind of soap would do as long as it's natural. Don't use the ivory or some really chemical soap because you're missing the whole point. I use a Dr. Bronner soap to make lavender eucalyptus. Today I brought you 2 flavors, tea tree oil, which is wonderful. And then, by the way, this is made to brush your teeth and clean yourself and bathe and all that stuff. It's as natural as can be. But you take a little bit of a couple of tablespoons and 1/4 water and spray, the ants are out of there. That also works on spiders, almost every creature. It will kill them on contact, as well as confuse because it leaves a smell behind. So you drive them out of the house. When the ants come back, you set up the ant cafes along the outside. The ant cafes is a little birdhouse. You put a cup inside. And if you remember what the ants are going for in the house, you say, well, they're going after the dog food or the cat food. They're going after the sugar. That's what you put outside inside the little ant cafe. You don't use any poison. You do nothing. You just feed them what they want to eat outside. The ants will start saying, hey, source of food there. Put the aphids away. Why work if we don't have to? Let's go after the source of food. So they'll go after that source of food. At the same time, they'll check out, they'll send a scout over to your house, and if it smells still there, forget it. Here's food, we'll go here. So everybody will start, you see the trail, we'll start going in, going back and forth, everybody will be getting the food, they'll disappear. If you have an ant infestation, what you do is, after you show them that's a source of food, then you become really, it's mean, I think it's mean, because you put introduced boric acid to their food. And you can buy boric acid in any store. You can buy it in a drugstore or in a garden center. It's pure boric acid. It's a white powder. The trick here is if you add too much boric acid, they die. You don't want that. See, ants have 2 stomachs. One they eat and one they take back to the colony. Remember the queen? She says, I want sugar. Everybody goes out and gets sugar. And they bring it back because they're ladies. They share everything. What one ant eats, they all eat.
Bye, everybody. Take care now. Don't forget to listen to my Cosmic Spaceship coming up next.